I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another Damn Fine Espresso. I'm joined here this morning by Alan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Alan, since David Lynch has passed this January, we've made 2025 a little bit of a celebration year about the director's work. And I think we dedicated several episodes, long and short, to his creative output. And one of my big feats this year was to finally watch Twin Peaks and start with the movie, kind of the prequel movie, and then make my way through the series, through all the episodes. And I finally reached the end of the third season that was released in 2017, only after a long time. And I think it's kind of also David Lynch's farewell project, the last time we see his filmmaking in such extensive fashion. And I really wanted to talk to you about it, Alan, because I know you're a Twin Peaks fan and someone who's watched the series repeatedly and rewatched it, I think, recently. So obviously I had a big interest in talking to you about it. So what's your take on Twin Peaks 3? You know, I remember that there was a debate whether it's actually a return to Twin Peaks or not. So is it a continuation of Twin Peaks? Is it something altogether different? How do you place it?
That's quite a tricky question. I think ultimately I would go that it is a continuation. To some extent, it's Twin Peaks season 3 and it's best looked in that way. It is quite different to what went before, and I think you can really see how much this is a Lynch project rather than this is David Lynch filtered through a big American network studio, to some extent, trying to run things. So it has different elements to it, but it's so closely tied to Twin Peaks, as the first seasons were, in characters, in David Lynch doing, I think, very much in that TV series. He's doing similar things in all three series, so I think it really is like it's season 3.
It is interesting how they balance from the beginning this the expectations of the audience, right, about it returning to Twin Peaks. I mean, it literally returns to Twin Peaks within the course of the season. So I think the title would make sense, but I think Frost and Lynch were kind of against having that title. They just wanted to call it Twin Peaks season 3, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting how they play with these expectations over the course of the series, that there's always these callbacks, characters show up for just a scene. And then we go back to these story strands that have opened up that don't seem to connect at all to Twin Peaks at first. But then, of course, if you're familiar with the wider mythology of Twin Peaks, you start to see bigger and smaller connections to the Black Lodge. Suddenly, you seem to understand, okay, yeah, Cal MacLachlan shows up, but he's in two different characters. And you always want to go back to Twin Peaks in a way. I was constantly on edge thinking, okay, so is he going to find Cooper again within himself? Or are we just going to be led by David Lynch to believe, you know, we have lost Cooper, but we still see him in two different, very extreme fashions? So I think that the play with these expectations I found fascinating.
And I think when the return started, the one big thing, so the one big cliffhanger was what happened to Agent Cooper. I'd sort of mentioned before how when I saw the movie, why I was quite cross because it didn't follow on from the cliffhanger at the end of season 2 of Twin Peaks, which is very much Cooper is now evil. Is he? It looks like he's evil. And you're leaving us there? This is how you're ending it? So going to see the film, thinking that might give a clue as to what happened next, and there's nothing in it. It doesn't help with that really at all. So this was the single point that felt like the limbo. It's just like, I want to know what happens next. And so when Twin Peaks The Return started, it's quite heavily on that. You really do get that. You get this notion that, yes, he was evil. He's been evil for all the intervening years. He's basically like Cooper has been possessed by an evil version. And now we're going to come back and we're going to hopefully deal with that. That this is sort of part of the story is, can he be redeemed? How are we going to follow these sort of different Coopers around? So that was sort of intensely satisfying the first time I saw it, in the sense that that's the cliffhanger I remember. That's the storyline that sort of lingered and I wanted a resolution of. And what was quite interesting is after David Lynch died, I rewatched, for the first time, I rewatched all of Twin Peaks almost as one thing. to properly start at the beginning and go all the way through season two, which is a bit of a chore, and then go straight onto The Return. And I was really struck by there's so much more from the earlier Twin Peaks that is in Twin Peaks The Return. I think when it was broadcast and I was watching it, there's a lot of characters. I didn't really remember them from Twin Peaks because I hadn't seen the TV show in a while. I mean, they were weird. You could roll with it as being weird. And then suddenly rewatching it, there was a lot of like, oh, wow, yeah, that is that person. That is. And I knew they were referencing to some extent where we'd left the characters. So suddenly how much it was tied to the earlier, you know, series, even though Cooper was the one I remembered, that tie was much more comprehensive. There was loads of strands that sort of carried across, which was quite fun. Impressive to see it again. But, you know, it is one show.
It really is. I think it's such a meticulous job that they did, also continuing from all these elements and trying to hark back, I guess, as you said, to the unfortunate season two, or mostly unfortunate season two, at least the second half, or, you know, a big chunk of it. But also to the movie, to Fire Walk With Me, which I started with earlier this year. And of course, I was completely confused by all the things going on, all the characters showing up, all the references didn't make sense. But in a way, it tries to make amends with both how badly the film sat when it came out, with all these expectations about closure, about Twin Peaks, or at least context, and with the two seasons, both good and bad. And then taking so much from the end of season two, as you said, the evil Cooper, the whole Black Lodge imagery as well, that is so, the Red Room, and all these characters that are, you know, so surrealist at the end of season two, but so great and open up so many possibilities. I was happy to see that they also go back to all of that. While what was amazing to me mostly, I think, is how they also opened up all these other locations and story strands that to me felt less like Twin Peaks, but more like, you know, harkings back to David Lynch's filmmaking altogether. I mean, including so many actors, actresses, and elements that show up in, you know, Mulholland Drive, Wild at Heart, that I felt, okay, David Lynch is not just doing Twin Peaks, he's doing David Lynch.
Yes.
All together.
Yeah. It's so recognizably David Lynch when you reference his other films. It's got a tone that I think the early TV series, they don't really have, because it was filtered through sort of US TV network structure, that he had these demands that when it got successful, suddenly the studio were more inclined to interfere to some extent with this hit they had. And when you watch the whole thing back, it is sort of suddenly you hit The Return and suddenly it feels, oh no, this is Lynch. Whereas before, there's hints of Lynch, there's episodes that feel Lynch, there's episodes that don't feel really Lynch at all. It's been sort of smoothed out in the demands to make sort of network television. And then suddenly, yeah, every episode of this is almost like a sort of mini Lynch movie. I mean, it really has this sort of quality of, it's far more unfiltered David Lynch.
And far more purely surrealist, yes, David Lynch, yeah. Right? There's a few episodes that are so weird and so beautifully surrealist at the same time that you almost don't connect it at all to anything Twin Peaks. But then, of course, it heavily expands the origins of evil in Twin Peaks, for instance. I mean, that is so strangely fascinating. But Alan, I wanted to ask you, what of this third season, what did you like best? Like, what were your... Because there's so many different elements in it. Did it feel like a whole thing? Or did you enjoy, like you said, Cooper's story arc the most? Or were there other elements that you really enjoyed? And were there other elements that maybe you found too weird to enjoy?
I mean, I would say going back to Cooper and resolving that storyline to some extent was incredibly satisfying. More so, I think, than a lot of the other cameos, which were nice, but they are sort of cameos. We've kind of been with those characters before. And then I think how, yes, it is surreal, but it isn't surreal in the sense that it feels aimless. So you have moments where what is surreal is still terrifying, is still uncanny, is still unsettling dramatically. And how it does that is really impressive. And I think that's like a quality that comes from a lot of Lynch's best movies. You can't quite put your finger on that something weird is happening, but your first reaction isn't, oh, I'm watching weirdness. your first reaction is, uh-oh, I'm worried about the characters I care about, that they're suddenly in this situation. Weird things are happening and they're involved. And I don't quite understand what's after what this creature is, but I want the character I like to get away from it. That kind of angle works really well. I think that's Lynch always does that really well. And he does this time and again here and is able to take it to another level without it just feeling like, oh, now you're just being weird for the sake of it. Even at its absolutely weirdest, and this is like a famous episode sort of midway through that is astonishingly weird, which is like no other TV you'll see. Even then, it still felt like it fitted within a drama. That you sort of got to the end of it and it wasn't for like, this is a bottle episode, what happened there? It fitted within this larger structure. I don't quite know how, but it wasn't like it came out of nowhere. You had this sort of detective story or mystery and then, oh, we're going to be weird for half an hour. It fitted the tone so well that I was so impressed by that. And I think that is the ability of Lynch when he's got sort of a level of full control of it to just run with it and make it all fit together.
And make it pure art, right? Some of the episodes I watched, I remember that beginning with the Purple Sea, for instance, where there's just like, not minutes on end, but it felt like minutes on end, these striking images. Or obviously, I think you're referring to that episode with the atomic explosion, yeah, right? That takes us back to the 50s and harks to Twin Peaks. But at the same time, it's also about, I think, that theme that Lynch was often about, kind of the original sin of the atomic bomb and this image of the mushroom cloud. I think we've seen that. That's what I enjoyed so much about it, that I felt, okay, he's now purely going back to his original fears and fascinations. And I thought that also translated really well into Twin Peaks. What it didn't have was the cozy feel of the 90s episodes, you know, where sometimes it was more like a soap opera where you felt, oh, is this 1950s TV or not? This felt very like, I don't want to say clean, but there was an atmosphere that was very suspenseful, threatening, or then heartfelt, but it was never kitschy, it was never melodramatic. It felt like also all these characters who had grown up by 27 years, just to see where they are in their lives. It felt very much like, okay, this is really 2017. This is how they would have progressed up to that point. They're still at the diner. They're now out in the woods. They've become conspiracy buffs, you know, with Nadine and Ross Tamblyn's character. One of my favorite elements in there was this reference to, okay, yeah, these characters would probably be, I don't know, Trump voters, or they would be sitting in their houses and just let the world go by outside and be detached from it. All these like images of people in Twin Peaks and elsewhere, where have they gone? What would people from the early 90s have become? Would we see them again in a TV show? So that part I really, really liked.
Yeah, no, it was striking that, again, I really got that more watching it all as one, that you really suddenly, I think when I first watched it on broadcast, there's a few of those where I was like, I vaguely remember that character, but not well enough to know, does this fit with where they were? And like, and then suddenly, yes, obviously they would become a conspiracy theorist. That fits perfectly who they are. So it was like quite striking how they have those elements. But like you said, it doesn't ever go the route of, and now it's that coziness again. We're not treading in that world of network telly. You know, one of the elements is being surreal, but one of the elements will be it's broadly comic, and you know, there's a bit of a murder mystery. I think it's interesting that there's sort of a murder mystery at the beginning of this, that but they don't play it like Twin Peaks. It's so gruesome from the off and so dark from the off that there's no scope of sort of like, oh, here's nice people and something bad has happened in their nice world. It is like, these were quite horrible people and something absolutely terrible has happened that no one can explain, and terrible things are just going to keep happening to all the people related to it. It's quite unremitting from the opening. I think it avoids going down the route of replicating, I think, how the beginning of Twin Peaks started with a murder and then the sort of traveling into the community. And I think maybe to some extent there are moments that jar when it does try to put in soap opera elements with the cozier characters we know from previous, and it tries to give them quite soap opera resolutions or sort of happy endings.
Mm-hmm.
they feel quite jarring in The Return because it's not how the rest of the season is going. They feel sort of slightly crowbarred in, so, oh, we've got these characters, we better do something with them. And I mean, this is a really sort of minor, not even a complaint, because I think it's still worth watching for it. But some of those moments feel atypical given the rest of the show.
That's true, yeah. Even the diner itself and the atmosphere in it feels you know, different. And that was always like enough, the cozy nucleus, either the sheriff's station around Lucy or then the diner with, I don't know, Peggy Lipton and Everett McGill making eyes at each other. And I think there's that, for instance, romantic resolution, for example, right? But I found interesting how they then linked it to, for instance, their children, the next generation, the younger side of the cast that was partly much more horrible than, you know, their parents or their older generation had ever been. So it was nicely contrasted with almost this dread of this kitschy 1990s characters that now have children, and these children are really going off the, literally going off the road or going off the rocker. So that I thought was also, you know, a good contrast to these more melodramatic moments. I have one question about the murder mystery, because you brought it up. I mean, the nucleus of Twin Peaks for many viewers, and I think also the ones that were kind of disappointed by everything that came after the middle of season two, is of course Laura Palmer's death and then the investigation into her murder. And I think one of the big challenges of season three was also to kind of bring that to a satisfying closure, or at least pick it up. And there's obviously Laura Palmer's image that shows up in the opening sequence, just in a cloud, her face, the famous picture. But then, of course, I think the challenge was, well, what do we do with the Laura Palmer story? And I was wondering, what did you think? How did they do with this key problem, I think, that was so important for many fans? Laura Palmer, is she now the center of Twin Peaks, or is she just one of the things that started it all? So what do you think about this element?
I think it did do interesting things with it. The, like I said, I thought on board on the start with the like Cooper story. And then when the sort of Laura Palmer angle comes into it and you realize that like Cooper is now, he's going to try and save her. He's going to try and sort of stop the murder from ever having happened. That on paper could have gone badly wrong as an idea, but I think it did really work, and the payoff felt stronger watching it all at once. It did sort of nicely pick up from, to some extent, where a lot of it had been left, and I think especially watching the movie, having that fresh in the mind, that the Laura storyline doesn't feel that gimmicky. It feels like an interesting next step and understandable that why they're doing it, why this is something that's happening. I think what's quite striking afterwards is you get to a point, and then after it happens, again, Twin Peaks sort of copies the final episodes of season two. Then it becomes impossible to know what's happening, how things are working, what's going on. It's not a happy ending. I mean, to some extent, it was never going to be a happy ending. But again, I didn't feel like, oh, it's just going weird now. It felt like it had earned that something huge has been undone. There will be consequences to that. And that was great to watch those playing out.
Oh, yeah. I love this double ending episode where at first you're kind of left with a sense of peace and this has been undone. The body of Laura Palmer disappears from the shore where it's washed up on the pilot. And then going to that final episode that is weirding you out completely at first and thinking, where are Cooper and Laura Dern going in this episode? They're just driving forever. And then it looping back to an alternate reality. I think that was so satisfying, thinking of what Twin Peaks had been and what David Lynch had done with it and all the false expectations that people had put into it, kind of saying, well, no, this is just going to move to yet another new twist and maybe a new avenue to go down. And I think the image of her house in the background and someone else living there is just, it was so powerful, I felt, when they realized it. And I realized how good Cheryl Lee was in Fire Walk With Me. You know, the fact that they're able, obviously, to use images from the film and the series to, again, show contrast of where the characters were at the time, but also to see how powerful she was as a figure in that film. And to pick that up and not just say, well, this was a misstep, it never happened, but to make it fit within this ending as well, I thought was really great.
And I think Fire Walk With Me especially feels more of a piece with season three, with the return, in the sense that I think the darker elements, I struggle a bit in the film if you've watched Twin Peaks. I think watching the film, I had an issue that it felt a lot of it was just like, let's just watch awful things happen to Laura Palmer. And I found that a bit of a struggle. And also, it kind of undid a bit, if you view it as a prequel, some of the element that I enjoyed watching Twin Peaks, which is she seems to be the perfect daughter, and then you discover that she isn't, that, you know, she's got this dark life, she's got her own life. And that's all front and center in the movie, and it kind of undid the way that was dramatically revealed in Twin Peaks. But I think if you view it less as a prequel to Twin Peaks and more as a prequel to Twin Peaks The Return, it fits a lot better in that. In that, you know, Twin Peaks The Return is darker. It is like horrible things are happening to people all the time. I think there's a level of surrealism in the film that really fits nicely into Twin Peaks The Return. Tonally wise, I think they're a better match than thinking of the TV series and thinking of the movie, the sort of clash and that difference I found a bit frustrating, whereas now with Twin Peaks The Return, the movie fits into that really well in terms of tone, content. So yeah, it is an interesting thing to sort of look back at it. And also, like you said, Laura Palmer's role in those final few episodes ties so nicely with her role in the film.
And also her double role in the series, right? Where she's also been Maddie, her cousin. And we always think, well, what's the connection here, having the same actress play that role over such a long period of time? I mean, that was already a very weird element in the original series and seemed too so foreboding. But I think it's, like you said, it's quite a feat bringing those disjointed pieces together, because people had different investments in the original series up to a certain point. They were big fans of Fire Walk With Me and big haters. And I think just to say, okay, we're going to tie this together in a satisfying way, but at the same time also defy expectations. I think that's where TV often goes wrong, especially fresh seasons of something, that it seemed to say, well, we need to tie up all these loose ends. Let's say it's going to be our last season, or we have to play with all the expectations. But I think that's what you mentioned about the network not being in the way, and Lynch and Frost really being able to say, okay, what are we going to do with this, both from our creative visions, perspectives, things that were maybe already planned, but also 27 years later, what can we do with it that is interesting to us now and fits within, you know, our interests as filmmakers at the moment. And I think mentioning Lynch at the time, as I said at the beginning, it's kind of his final big output in his career. I think they were kind of planning to maybe do another season. I think there were a couple of quotes that I read that they were maybe thinking about it, and the last episode, I think, leaves that pretty open. But how does Twin Peaks 3 now sit as a, if you think of it now in retrospect, as David Lynch's final 18-hour movie? Any final thoughts on that being his last work?
I mean, I really like it. So in terms of being his last work, it's not a disappointment. I also feel the ending has a weirdness. It has an openness to it. But I also don't feel that they have to continue it in the way that I felt when Twin Peaks season 2 ended. I really wanted to know what was next. It really felt to me like a cliffhanger. And Twin Peaks The Return happily resolves that cliffhanger for me, which is dramatically very satisfying. I don't feel the same need for the end of Twin Peaks The Return to be resolved. It is a fascinating, strange ending. It is enough to sort of let it wash over you and get to the end and not quite know what you've seen. I found that very satisfying. So I know they were talking about it. I'm not sure how well developed those discussions were. I do think it's interesting that, like, there's such a long period of time where David Lynch just isn't making films. And he surely was powerful enough to go, I want to make this film. I have an idea. I can run with it. I will get the money somehow. He seems to be sort of slightly not that interested in it, because I feel if he was, films would have been made. And then he makes this huge TV series and gets all of it exactly, you know, it really taps into obviously what he liked making in films. Whether there's an element to which that was how he felt he could do what he wanted to do, with someone to say, you've got this budget and you've got 18 hours, rather than you've got this budget and you've got 2 hours. And by the way, the distributor and the producers might get involved. I guess it suggests that this was a format that he was quite happy with. This was what interested him telling stories going forward. But to be honest, I don't feel left in limbo by his passing, that like Twin Peaks is now an unresolved TV show. It reached an ending and it feels complete. And if you, like I said, I watched the whole thing for the first time sort of as one sort of binge over a month or so. It feels like it reaches an ending, and that's very satisfying.
It is. To me, it felt like I wanted to go back to the first episode, so the pilot, or to Firewalk With Me immediately, because now I had this understanding for this universe, and it looping back so much, especially in the last two episodes, to the original Twin Peaks and the film and Laura Palmer. I really wanted to go back and say, okay, now I will understand much more watching it another time. So, I mean, what a great way of kind of putting you onto the eternal loop of Twin Peaks. And saying, okay, now I really feel I get it, and to have another go at it and to go through it. I also did it more or less in one go now over several months. And I think for me, it was the very first time. And I think my key takeaway is also how massively diverse this whole Twin Peaks universe is. To me, of course, just hearing about it, for me, it was this, you know, 90s series about this girl that is murdered, and then the investigation into it that gets super weird, and people were kind of partly turned off. And now I finally see how well this also fits into David Lynch's filmmaking as a whole. And I think season three, really, my main takeaway is that by 2017, the borders had kind of dissolved between Twin Peaks, David Lynch's filmmaking, his interest in art, his story structure as well, the fact that there are these 18 episodes, but they kind of flow relatively freely into each other. And there is just this, yeah, it's like you're watching a huge painting in front of you, right? And you can look into different corners and see different things and have different interests in it. But it feels like one piece together. And I really enjoyed that sense of a piece of art.
Yeah, I think doing the big watch, and I guess if we're sort of thinking what was sort of negative, the sort of minor quibbles, is this was the first time I noticed the sort of plot strands that don't get developed in The Return. So you have like a woman who, the last we see of her is her face on a cupboard door. That seemed to be a whole plot involving her. Watching all at once, I suddenly thought, I want more of it. I want to know what happened next with that. And no, there's nothing there. So watching it all at once, you suddenly spot, in a way that, you know, 27 years, you forget that this is where you were left hanging. There's these things that leave you hanging. And I was sort of like, oh, I wish, even if it was done in an oblique, very Lynchian way, if we're playing this game of resolving storylines, actually, there are storylines that I was a bit interested in that you don't explore. So that was a shame. I do... And it's such a minor thing. I think the absence of the sheriff is felt in Twin Peaks The Return.
Oh, yeah.
It's the one character, I think, in terms of, yeah, you've got a lot of cameos that are fun, but there is such a nice dynamic there, and we're going back. And I think he would have been a very useful character to straddle the coziness of the cameos with something darker and nastier of The Return. I think he could have bridged that gap, because I think he does it a little bit in the original series. He somehow managed to work in both worlds quite well. And I did feel his absence. It's more jarring again if you watch it all at once, because suddenly he's an important character and then he's just not there anymore. And they kind of fob off the reason why he's not there. But I did sort of miss that. And I think the last thing I'll say is this sort of minor, we may as well list a couple of criticisms while we're doing. It's the whole plot line of the British kid with the glove that ends up punching Bob.
Oh, yes.
And I think when I first saw it, I was a bit like, And then on the recent rewatch, yeah, it's still, as sort of, this is how Bob, the big bad, gets defeated. It's ludicrous. And it feels, well, maybe this is deliberate, it feels like not a very good drama, or a sort of very silly TV drama that is delving in the supernatural. It has these sort of elements to it. The execution is odd. It doesn't feel like a very dramatic or epic scene, given that you'd kind of think the death of Bob would be like the death of Sauron. This would be like a massive explosion at the end. It's a very, it's shot in a very silly way. And so the execution is like watching an 80s film where they didn't have quite the budget to show the monster being defeated. So you're kind of going to have to do some of the work yourself to make the scene feel more credible. It has that quality to it, which it's Lynch. Maybe that was deliberate, but that feels quite strikingly jarring. And rewatching it, I haven't made my peace with it.
It feels very anticlimactic. And to me, it was just plain confusing because, as it is with Twin Peaks, a lot of characters are introduced. And if you watch it over a certain period of time, sometimes you don't pay attention to certain story strands as much as to others, or they're quite new. So when the thing with the glove happened, I was just plain confused because I thought, wait a second. Yeah, I remember this kid was in the sheriff's station. He was locked up with these other characters. And then there is that finale. And I thought, that's like kind of like a superhero movie, right? You have a special power suddenly that can defeat evil. I mean, that's great. But it felt very, very quick. And especially, I think, unsatisfying because none of the main characters that were facing off with Bob or wrestling with Bob were really a part of it. But it almost feels, intentional that it's kind of anticlimactic. I mean, with Lynch, I can only imagine that they must have considered very carefully how to, end this. So to choose this must be a deliberate choice, I assume.
Yeah.
But what does it say? Yeah, does it say that maybe new characters, that were introduced, the next generation somehow also plays a big role in shaping the future after this is all over? I'm not sure. It just didn't make sense. And as for missing characters, I would say the sheriff is certainly felt the most, I agree. I thought also all these dedications to actors that either had passed or were passing while they were filming, which I thought was quite moving to suddenly see that the Rosenberg character and Miguel Ferrer had passed and he plays such a big role in season 3. Things like these kind of also placed it, I think, in a meta level, right? That you had people who were part of it that no longer are there. Obviously, they had passed or declined, retired from acting. There are all these cases. Piper Laurie, she's one of my favorite actresses. Obviously, I was missing her very much, even though her part is not quite as big anymore later on. But yeah, there were people I missed, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's, I think watching it all at once, I was able to sort of pick up on stuff and thought, this is a shame, but not to the detriment of the whole experience. It still is sort of a fabulous watch, and it does come together as more of a single drama, I think, watched together that way. There is a lot of, I don't think he was making a spin-off. I don't think he was making something that's loosely connected. He is making another season of Twin Peaks, and it just comes back that if you watch it now, you've got a bit of a slog in season 2. There are episodes in that aren't very good. I wonder whether there would have been scope for him to go back and re-edit season 2 to the essential bits, and just so we can really make it all fit together as a single work, because I think that's the one thing that will drive me away from doing a big binge rewatch for a while. Is you've got to get through a bit of season 2. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. And I could stick with it with this rewatch because I knew the return was coming and I was sort of excited for that. But yeah, it's a slog. But yeah, no.
It's 10 hours probably or 12, right? Where it really you have to get through. So maybe do something on the side while these episodes are going on. So you've at least seen them. There's at least one directed by Diane Keaton, weirdly enough. So maybe as a little dedication to her, you could watch that one a bit more.
And it's hard to skip actual episodes because even really bad episodes have good bits in them. So like I said, if they could have re-edited it and said, right, Twin Peaks season 2 amounted to about 6 hours worth of material, here's the stuff you might want to watch. But yeah, I'd recommend doing. I'd put Fire Walk With Me, watch it between season 2 and season 3.
I would do that next time I watch it. I think this is really a good order.
I think it fits there. And I realized that there was a lot more in Fire Walk With Me than when I was originally cross about it, it makes a lot more sense now viewed with season three. So yeah, definitely worth the big rewatch.
Well, dear listeners, there's a lot of options to go through Twin Peaks, but as you noticed, we highly recommend you do it in any order possible.
In any order possible. That would be very Lynchian. Just put in it on any shuffle. Order possible. Just have this way of where it will play random episodes and then just watch it that way. I think Lynch would approve of that level of randomness in it.
That would be fantastic. And just immerse yourself in the weirdness, the beauty, the art, and the suspense of Twin Peaks and the whole universe. Well, thank you, Alan, for delving one more time into Twin Peaks and Lynch. We've done it repeatedly, and it's been very, very insightful. So thank you for that. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us this morning. And join us again for another damn fine espresso. Bye-bye.
Bye.